Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. As always, we got a great show. The two guys that I'll be speaking with today are more than just peers in the industry. I would consider them friends. Robert Enten, the EVP and CIO from Vornado Realty Trust, and Alonzo Carr, CTO from Carr Properties. Two great guys, but true leaders. I think Robert and I go back 15 plus years, and I think I've known Alon feels like close to 10 or so. But when we choose our chairman for the conference, it's not an easy decision. We've got lots of great people in the industry. But what we do is we look for people who are always consistently out in front of the pack, not waiting for things to happen, but making things happen. And then the second attribute is people who are willing to share. I mean, you know, everybody's got three jobs these days. And these guys, with their already busy schedule, find the time to work with us to help make the conference better and better every year. So with that, why don't we bring in Robert and Alon and let's get our conversation started. Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Good. Good. How are you?
Good. So Robert, is it about right 15, 20 years?
Yes. I hate to say it, but it's probably 15 plus years. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I would love to find a picture of the two of us 15 years ago.
I'm sure we look exactly the same.
Oh, I'm sure. No gray hair, wrinkles, not there, right? Ilan, am I right around 10? Does that feel right?
Yeah, around 10. I was digging through some old emails the other day, and I was finding emails actually with Howard for RealCom back in, I would say, 2005, 2006. So
wow.
really go back.
15? Yeah, 15. Yeah. Yeah, you're the same way. Well, I don't know. I think I mentioned this last week as well. You know, now being in this career for 25 plus years, the good news is what we do, it's not a job, right? And it is truly a career, and you got relationships like this going way back. It's kind of fun to be on the journey together, right? So when you're beating your head against the wall and it's bleeding, you can call somebody and they'll understand exactly what you're talking about. So anyway, so we're getting ready for RealCom, as you know, and you are two of our three chairs, and I want to shout out to Sheridan Ware, who is probably sleeping right now because she's in Australia, and we've had conversations with her as well, but I didn't think it was really fair to ask her to join us on this conversation, so you guys will cover for her. But before we get to the conference and all the other topics, you know, the elephant in the room still is COVID, and I think we're on our third wave, and you know, it's going to be 2 years here shortly. Robert, your building's back to work. New York City epicenter, you know, a quick update on what the heck is going on with COVID and buildings?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's maybe almost even a tale of two, not cities, but a tale of two cities in a way. You know, Delta has thrown a big monkey wrench into the opening of a plant. I will say that the city is very much alive and people are everywhere. And I went to dinner two nights ago and it packed. I mean, packed, and many restaurants are packed and a lot of people on the streets. I have three kids that live in the city, enjoying a very active life. But of course, the office occupancy is still not what it should be. It was probably going to tick up significantly post Labor Day, but I think the Delta variant really put a wrinkle in it. So city is alive, office occupancy not there yet. We're all waiting. And I think it's probably going to be it's gonna be another bunch of months. We'll see what happens with the Delta variant. But yeah, then there's going to be a fair amount of space that needs to be absorbed, because there's a certain number of people left the city. But as you know, the tech companies alone are absorbing space inside New York City at an amazing rate. You know, Facebook alone probably leased over 1 million square feet last year, at least, you know, 750,000 feet with us alone. And we have them in other buildings. And, you know, you've got Google, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, they're all eating up space in New York City.
But interesting.
The city has gone through a number of these cycles where people were portending gloom and doom, and you know, there's only one New York City.
All right. It comes and goes. Ilan, mm-hmm. How about you? What are you seeing in your neck of the woods and in your properties?
So city's also packed. A lot of people, restaurants are full inside and outside. But like Robert said, our buildings are still not at capacity. We're seeing that we had a nice peak that we saw before Delta, but once Delta hit, we saw a big drop in the numbers. And where before people were saying that companies were saying that they would be coming back sometime in September, right after Labor Day. Now we're seeing that they're saying towards the end of October, or maybe even now some of them are saying we're not going to take the chance for the new variant. We're just going to project it all the way into January.
Right. Yeah, it's funny how that goalpost moves, right? It was, you know, 4th of July, you know, get some people back, and then it was Labor Day, then it was October, November, and we are starting to hear, you know, January. And now, and it's what's interesting to me is I'm more of a, as much of a social historian as I am a technologist. It is interesting that the restaurants are filled, the ballparks are filled, but the offices aren't, you know, and so I think we all know there is something else going on here. And this digital transformation, mobile worker, work from anywhere movement was already underway. The office Q Farm was morphing to more of an amenity-filled meeting place for collaboration. And I think when we do come back, you know, finally, I think you're gonna see resistance from employees and bigger changes coming for office footprints. Any thoughts on that, Robert? I mean, you're in the epicenter of, you know, New York City. What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Yeah. Well, first comment, you know, it's interesting you point out that the restaurants, the U.S. Open Stadium, the football stadiums are all full. And because it is largely right now an unvaccinated issue. The vaccines have done wonders, and I think all the vaccinated people are largely going about living their lives reasonably normally, right? So with respect to the office, you know, I think probably out of an abundance of caution, many of the corporations are continuing to give optionality. You know, but having said that, you know, particular comment to your thought, I think that it's hard to make a final judgment where the workplace ends when you have a public health crisis amidst all of us, because we're all very worried about sickness. I think when that's all gone, we'll see what normalcy is. I do think you're going to see, for sure, you're going to see more hybrid situations. Yeah. But I think that those who are portending that the office footprints will be drastically reduced, I don't think that's correct. I do think that most of the feedback I see and hear, you know, give validation to the fact that culture, human interaction is hugely important, and you just don't get that. You know, work from home remotely on a full-time basis, I just think is so flat and stale. I don't think that's going to survive. I think you're going to have a lot of in-person, and I think you're going to have a lot of optionality.
And I think you're going to see a whole new generation of immersive technologies that bring the outside world into that office. So it's almost ubiquitous. You know, is Elon sitting next to me, or is he digitally sitting next to me? And I've started to see some stuff come about that, you know, it's literally been around for 20 years, but it's getting more and more interesting every day.
Yeah, which we largely almost have today. I mean, you know, today the pivot to work from home as a result of the better bandwidth and better video technology has made the pivot pretty, you know, I don't want to say easy, but it certainly made a lot easier. If this was 20 years ago, this would have been massively different.
Massively different. And what else is interesting is when you take the mathematics of increased productivity because of no commutes, call it 2 hours a day times 5 days, 10 hours, counterbalanced against, you know, the lack of productivity because of no in-person collaboration, how does that balance out in the end? And that's the biggest social science experiment I've seen in my career. By far.
But at the same time, I say I can't wait to go back into the office because I find myself working double or triple working from home because there's no hours. You're really working.
There is no hours.
All the time.
And that's,
right?
So, you know, it's a good point, Elon, because that separation of home and office is actually pretty important. We've been back, Jim. We've been back since July 6th, full time at Hornady. Right. And we have a hybrid. We do 1 day a week. I'm home now. We do 1 day a week at home. But it's been great for me. I miss the office terribly. And just the 10 meetings a day that I could do walking up to somebody and having a 2 minute conversation, I think that's really important.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like I said, we'll see how this all works itself out. But you guys, our industry is right smack in the middle of this. And that's why these conversations are important. Now, interesting, next week we're gonna have one commercial and two corporates. We're gonna have Google and Microsoft and then Oxford, Sabine, Dean, and Emmanuel. So that conversation will be more from the end user standpoint saying, okay, what are you guys seeing as the tenants, right? And I think it's critical to have that cross-pollinization between commercial landlord and tenant, corporate occupant tenant. So. All right, so let's get into the real estate tech, right? It's called a lot of different things, real estate tech, prop tech, real estate innovation. we don't care what we call it. It's technology applied to our industry and to change things. So let's start with Robert. Robert, real estate tech, top of mind. What are you dealing with? As soon as we hang up today's episode, what are you going to be working on?
A couple of things are really dominating my schedule today. As you probably know, we're renovating the Penn Plaza area to really make a campus. So we have approximately 10 million square feet in and around the Garden and Penn Station. And we opened up Farley Station in the last year. We're renovating Penn 1 and Penn 2 at this point. And the amount of technology we're pouring into that campus, because we're really producing a campus environment for our tenants. So it's a massive amount of technology that we're putting into the buildings, both with networks and functionality and amenities and access to those amenities. So I spent a lot of many people at Vornado were spending a lot of time on that development project. That's probably, you know, a good chunk of my day.
Quick question on that project. If you were doing that project 5 years ago and the technology integration was a 3, what's Penn Station today?
8 or 9. I mean, you know, we talked about what the pivot to work from home would have been like 10 years ago. The advent of better bandwidth, better both Wi-Fi and soon to be CBRS and of course the telecom, and the much better cloud alternatives for all the applications that are now built and are cloud based allows us to provide amenities and integrated amenities in a way that we couldn't have done a bunch of years ago.
Right. And then all the IoT applications, you know, bringing new levels of opportunity on the smart building side. And I keep wanting to talk about the experience too. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, in the old days we'd have fountains in the lobbies or beautiful pieces of art or sculptures. Now with all these digital capabilities, you know, what Disney-esque immersive experiences are we going to bring to these buildings to make it better than staying at home in your pajamas? Right. I mean, that's really the conversation.
And that's a lot of what we're doing in the Penn campus. The amount, again, the miles of cable fiber, the number of TV, you know, screens, and really cool screens on staircases, screens everywhere, and some really cool special effects. Things that are screens that will be interactive based on the people walking in front of them and based on the weather outside and all kinds. You know, those are things you couldn't have done years ago.
Exactly. Ilan, how about you? What's on top of mind as far as technology in our industry?
So we're dealing mainly with from the analytics side of it. But for us, it's not so much we've been working 2.5 years already on the analytics side of it. But for us, it's the integration piece of it. We're finding that we're integrating into a lot of different systems and we have to standardize and normalize our data. And as much as everyone is telling you that they have an API and an SDK and a direct link into the data, it never really is. We end up having to build a lot of it on ourselves because they want to share and they open up what the vendors really want you to have, but not necessarily what you really need. So getting all of that in place, but then understanding how do you take all of that data and layer it one on top of another. I always compare our analytics to almost like blood pressure. You have your systolic and you have your diastolic, and one can be in the green and the other one can be in the green, but the delta number between them is bad, and now something is bad or wrong within that specific area or within those systems. So also understanding how do you layer that information on top of one another, and then being able to actually make it actionable and automate again around it.
Right. And we talked a little bit about this in prep for the call. You know, this whole integration of building technologies into a cohesive network, much like an enterprise network that we all grew up with. It's been around for 10, 15 years, but it seems to be getting more and more dialogue. Although I will tell you, there are brand new projects that I'm introduced to daily. Not a conversation. So even though we're making progress and guys like you and others, you know, are certainly embracing this, there's a good chunk of the industry who still, when you say building network, you know, data integration, they kind of look at you kind of strange.
And the new developments are easy, right? Because the new developments already come with brand new equipment, brand new hardware. There you have to fight with the vendor on how much access you get and how much access they don't get, because they're used to just having all the access. So we have to fight with them. But it's on the older buildings that we're looking at, but that's the majority of our portfolio, where you're looking in and you say, how do we take these older systems and how do we make them smart now? Or what can we attach to it that will give us better outlook. And we're looking at that on our HVAC systems. We're looking at our elevators. We're looking at systems that are fairly old, and what kind of devices can you attach them today to at least get the data and the information? And we're learning that what we thought the information was right, that we thought if we put an air handler in a specific location, it's going to blow specific things to a specific area. We're realizing now that we put these sensors in there that they're not doing what we're actually expecting them to do. So it's an education piece.
Yeah, it's the first inning. Well, not maybe the third inning, you know.
Yeah.
But imagine the people who haven't been up to bat yet, what they're up. You know, you've learned a lot. So, guys.
Some of it depends on scale, Jim. You know, we're fortunate to have such a dense New York City portfolio. So, you know, our wide area network across our buildings has been at least a gigabit. Every building is a gigabit path, redundant paths, all firewalled, all VPN access only. Mm-hmm. With lots of network segmentation, but Elon, I couldn't agree more. Each segment, you know, whether it's the elevators or the turnstiles, the facial recognition, it's constant upgrading of the systems that, you know, building new, you're right, it helps a lot, but, you know, we renovate all the time and putting in modern systems as you go. You know, you need the network infrastructure, and then, you know, components show up as you do your upgrades.
So guys, we're going to take a quick break. Then when we come back, we're going to talk about your roles as CIO, as our chairman, and what you hope to see at RealCom 2021. So we'll be right back. All right, let's bring the guys back and continue our conversation about the upcoming RealCom and IBCon 2021. All right, guys, so as you know, you've been around for quite a number of years. We choose about 75 advisors, RealCom, 75 advisors, IBCon, but it all bubbles up to our chairman and chairwoman. And so the two of you and Sheridan Ware out of Australia are the three co-chairs for RealCom 2021. And Robert, you've had this role before and we're very vocal on some of the things you wanted as far as the exhibit floor and how you guys interact with the vendors. What would you like to see this year, from your vantage point as spokespeople for the advisor community? We'll start with Robert.
Yeah, good thought, Jim. You're right. I always, you know, you guys purport to be thought leaders in the industry, and you are. And so my comments, as you know, are always about governance and making sure that the vendor sponsorship versus the real independent conversations are very carefully segregated. I think this year the focus is still there a little bit, but more than that, I think RealCom is one of the most valuable forums that exist out there for us. It's a great collection of all of the people you want to spend time with the network, whether it be consultants, whether it be colleagues or vendors. Because it was all virtual last year and because this year will be challenged, I'm particularly interested to see how we can make this a really immersive event for those that are there and see how productive we can make the virtual aspect of it. You know, because to your point, you think that that's our future where conferences will both be real and virtual. And I think you're right.
We on the hybrid side, we can scale, you know, left, right, up and down the meter. Right. And we've recently reached out to our Australian community and said, hey, we know you can't travel. We want to do this immersive event, but we need to get a certain amount of you committed. And we haven't seen that commitment yet. Right. And I know everybody's tired of Zoom calls and stuff, but I do believe since we've done three hybrid events that we're really capable of doing something way beyond a Teams or a Zoom call, right? So we will have, you know, a certain level of immersiveness and interaction. We're working on, you know, the streaming from Conference Live like we always do, RealCom Live. And then, of course, we're playing with a new idea of a virtual exhibit floor where anybody can go up to our website, click a button, and be inside of one of our vendors' booth with a click of a button. Right, that's never been done before. So we're working on some fun stuff, and if the community that can't travel says we want to do more immersive, we can dial it in. But you know, as a small company, we just got to be careful that we don't build too much, and then they don't come. Right, so it's a balance. But we're excited about being at the edge and taking some chances.
You know, I think that's important. And my focus is I really think that there's no substitution for human interaction. So. Seeing something successful where there's a great engagement there, and those who want to attend virtually still get a lot out of the conference, that's your challenge.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. And I mean, you could put cameras and studios in every room, right? You know, so people could, you know, but that, for you, anybody who's tried it, it's a very expensive proposition to do it right. You know, and the last thing you want to do is do it and then three people log in. So there's a balance, and we're honest, we're transparent. We tell people exactly what we're thinking. We get the feedback, and then we build upon that relationship. So, Ilan, how about you? What would you like to see, you know, conversationally brought to the conference this year?
So I think this is you know, bringing it together. You know, with what Robert said is also the conversation that I usually have with the other CIOs that are within the come to the conference itself, and be able to have those one-on-ones. Yeah, let's meet out for drink a little bit later. Let's go out. Let's go have a you know, some breakfast together, and talk about the different, because like you know, our field now. I mean, we're there's so many companies that are out there today, and we're doing so many things. And I think that, you know, we have no problem sharing. I mean, at least from my perspective, Robert's perspective, and a lot of other CIOs, we have no problem sharing. And during the year, it's very difficult to get a hold of one another, or even then, we'll talk once a quarter, right? But having this event, when you can actually sit down and you're also like together for like 3 days, and you can actually
focus, right?
Yeah. And really focus on problems, issues. You know, even what are you doing? What can we help? How can we integrate together? How can we work? I mean, all of these things are really, really missing. And I think that this is what I would like to also see, even if you cannot attend, be able to have those, because we're dedicated for those 3 days and we're committing to those 3 days, that even if you're virtually, to commit to those 3 days, to be able to be available for these kind of conversations and roundtable discussions.
Right.
You know, Ilan, you make a good point there. I've been at a number of virtual conferences, and the problem is exactly what you just stated. I won't stay there for 8 hours. I'll come in and go out because you're so distracted. But I have to put in a cheap plug, Jim, for this immersive engagement. Come Sunday and play a great round of golf with us at our golf.
Exactly. Can't do that. You can do that virtually, but it's not too much fun.
No, right. But we're gonna have it's a great course. We're gonna have a great outing.
Well, and you know, just to go to the strategy, we chose Arizona intentionally. It's going to be stunning weather that time of year. It's in the desert. It's got a health aura about it. Doors will be open. There will be booths, exhibit booths out on patios outside. We're taking all sorts of chances we would never have taken before to try to understand what going forward does the inside of a building look like. You know, we're inside buildings for conferences. You guys have office buildings and retail, so we're going to try a whole bunch of different stuff. We got six vendors, four maybe from Australia who can't come, that they're going to be brought into the exhibit floor virtually. So, and then we're going to move them around. If there's a party, we're going to move them to the party. Right? These are all ideas we're thinking of. We're trying. Some will make it. Some won't. But the future is indoors, outdoors, virtual, on-site, you know, and it's a wild west right now, you know, but it's fun and a little stressful. So
you make a good comment there about, you know, the outdoors. You know, one of the interesting things, you've got all these urban cities with these major glass buildings where you typically can't even open the windows. Tomorrow's buildings, I think, will have a lot more open air all the way up into the spire, so that you can get fresh air. And from a wellness point of view, it's going to be an interesting transformation. Of skyscrapers.
You're just going to have to fight with lead in about your certification but you know, it's a constant battle, but I think that wellness and wellness will win.
Robert, I got laughed off the stage. I think it was actually New York City 25 years ago, the then editor of National Real Estate Investor. I said on stage in a room of maybe 500 people, I said, we got to make the windows operable. He looked at me and he goes, you obviously haven't been in the industry long, don't know what you're talking about. And literally the whole audience laughed at me for about 90 seconds. Well, guess what? We're going to have operable windows because it makes some sense. I believe it does. You know, and there's technical issues. There's engineering issues.
You know, a lot more terraces in the buildings and a lot more outdoor space, even at very high elevations. Yeah, that's some of what we're doing now in Penn Plaza, you know, and some of Facebook in Farley has a massive outdoor terrace on the roof. That's just phenomenal.
Yep.
Activated amenity areas that even if they have rooftops, so you can actually work outside, but at the same time, get that ventilation in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've also done that at the Mart in Chicago. We've got tremendous, great roof space that's being utilized for that.
Yeah. So we are out of time, but I'm going to one more 30-second question to you, if you can answer quickly. Robert, number one technology you're paying attention to in 2022?
A little bit, but I think what Elon said earlier, the convergence of the various OT apps, whether they're access management or whether it's amenity booking or whether it's aggregating data from BMS systems and sensors, there's a lot of play in that space right now. And I think that the vendors, there's going to be a convergence. There needs to be a convergence, both because we need a reduction of vendors and centralized functionality, and you need some data normalization. So that's a very active space. Be interesting to see that.
The latest estimate is we now have 8,000 to 9,000 vendors globally on prop tech. We need less than 1,000. So you tell me how we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. But Elon, how about you? What's number one tech 2022?
Predictive analytics for both operation and the business, and then be able to automate or react towards it in a timely manner.
Yep, what we call live, living, breathing buildings. Talking to each other, something happens on the left side, things on the right side change.
That's correct.
Guys, I hate to cut this off. We could just keep going. I mean, well, this will be posted online as for others to watch. They'll get some insight on what we're got planning in 6-7 weeks now. And I just got to say thank you, not just for being on today, but for also being our chair people, but most importantly, being thought leaders in our industry for almost 2 decades now. And so I want to say thank you to that. It's been a pleasure working with you, and looking forward to our future journey.
So thank you very much. Great
day. Thank you, Jim, for
having me. Okay, be well, guys. All right, with that, I bring on Howard Berger, who's going to show us or talk to us a little bit about the news this week. And I know he's always got some really interesting things going on in the world of real estate technology. So with that, I'll bring on Howard. There you are. How are you, sir?
Hey, Jim, I'm good. I'm good. Great
show.
I'm
sorry we went over a little bit, but it's not like network TV where we have to finish exactly 30 minutes, but I apologize for going over a little bit.
We do color outside the lines a little bit. but I mean, what a great conversation. Robert Alon, and a shout out to Sheridan, who couldn't be with us today. This was a great show. So as Jim mentioned, we highlight a few news stories every week. We release our weekly news briefing every Thursday, about 11 a.m. Pacific. And our top story, listen, IAQ, indoor air quality for our buildings, has never been more critical than over the past 16 months. And it's now central to health, wellness, even leasing and tenant-employee relation conversations for both landlords and tenants. And since last March, we have seen a slew of new IAQ products, including a lot of hype and misinformation. So this week's lead article, it focuses on a consortium promoting a data-driven approach to IAQ, and while doing that, helping filter out some of the noise from the HVAC equipment industry. And this is, and the consortium is called Aspire. The acronym stands for Alliance for Sustainable and Practical IAQ in Real Estate. And it's a consortium of 5 companies who each contribute a complementary piece of the puzzle that directly address the core practical IAQ challenges of today's buildings. Number one, providing a positive user experience; 2, promoting health and safety; and 3, helping building operate more efficiently and sustainably. And this article addresses some new concepts and advancements in IAQ, and it takes a look forward to what's next and how to provide a framework to pull it all together. So this is a great article, don't miss it. Next, I wanna shout out to our tech partners with an article from Tamil Wong and Julie Miner from Cohen Resnick. This is a great thought piece on how ESG-ing can drive value by building trust. So COVID's profoundly changed a lot of the traditional behaviors, along with our understanding of how we build and sustain trust. Companies are starting to take a longer view of value and social impact and how they invest and develop and how they support health and well-being of their occupants and neighborhoods. So ESG, or environmental, social, and governance initiatives, they're on the rise in most organizations. We're starting to see that ESG-ing can actually create a competitive advantage that can lead to increased profits. So as with other important initiatives, you need a method to set goals and measure your progress. So it's critical to have a strong data strategy and metrics to gauge whether or not you're hitting or missing your KPIs. And that's easy for the E, but not so much for the S and G. And this is not an easy lift for most organizations. It's going to have significant impacts on tenants, employees, surrounding communities, investors, developers, owners, operators. But transparency is the key to building trust, and the ability to report on ESG initiatives is only going to increase in importance. Great article. Suggest you read it. Finally, Lendlease, globally integrated real estate and investment group, they've been creating technology solutions for their own smart buildings and smart community projects. So Lendlease and Google Cloud just announced a new global partnership focused on construction and building operations. And this will couple Google Cloud with Lendlease's Podium platform. That's their advanced AI and ML machine learning smart building operation platform. And now with Google Cloud as their exclusive cloud provider, Lendlease is going to start migrating mission critical workloads, data intense CAD platforms, in-house project excellent platform, their Ollie, their digital mentor for project delivery, and their Oracle-based e-finance system that'll bolster operational efficiency and their reporting and analytics capabilities, while giving Lendlease a stronger cyber posture across the organization. That's a lot, and that's it for me today. I'm out of time, but there's more in the weekly briefing. Please check it out. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you all next week.
All right, Howard, a great job. And, you know, people, you know, in a world of 140 characters, you know, tweets and ADD, people, you know, can read headlines, but you do such a great job at sifting through the mountains of bad stories, finding, you know, 10 or so good ones, and then focusing on three on this RealCom Live episode. So as always, thank you. Great job. And we will see you next week.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, so before I wrap and tell you about next week, we're going to hear from our final sponsor, and I will be back to you in 30 seconds or so. All right, a quick shout out to our sponsors. And just to let you know, next week, I mentioned a little bit earlier, a phenomenal show. Sabine Lamb from Google and Dean Hopkins from Oxford Properties and Emmanuel Daniel from Microsoft talking about the IBCon Smart Building side of our conference. So, you know, and also we're going to get a great perspective from two super tech heavyweights, Google and Microsoft, and then of course, Oxford Properties, one of the most progressive forward-thinking commercial operators in the country or in North America, if not the world. So it's going to be a great, great show. And with that, I say goodbye for now, and we will see you next Friday on RealCom Live. Be well.